1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Stop surfing the dial. You found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. The Senate has voted and a debt ceiling deal has passed.
The 60-vote threshold having been achieved, the bill is passed.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
We've saved the country from the scourge of default, even though there were some on the other side who wanted default, wanted to lead us to default.
CBS's Scott McFarland's on Capitol Hill.
This high-stakes, high-drama standoff ended with a marathon set of votes in the U.S. Senate deep into the night. They voted on a series of proposed amendments that weren't going to pass, including one that would have made larger spending cuts to reduce the deficit.
And if they couldn't agree on a deal, the country wouldn't have had enough money to pay the bills. There are big concerns over people using off-brand versions of popular weight loss drugs. CBS's Alexander Tin with details.
Amid a nationwide shortage of weight loss drugs like Wegovy and Ozempic, the FDA warns some pharmacies have turned to compounding their own off-brand versions using a different so-called salt formulation of the drug's active ingredient, semaglutide. While some pharmacies are able to respond to shortages by compounding with fewer restrictions, the FDA warns that swapping out semaglutide for these alternative salt forms may not be effective and could pose safety concerns.
Boeing has delayed flight of the Starliner spacecraft indefinitely. Space consultant Bill Harwood on the latest in a line of setbacks.
Boeing initially hoped to launch the Starliner on its first piloted test flight in 2020, but the spacecraft has run into a steady stream of problems, forcing one delay after another. The company had been hoping to launch two astronauts to the space station on July 21st, but the flight is now on indefinite hold because of parachute and wiring problems. Boeing says a flight later this year is still feasible, but that'll depend on getting analysis, repairs, and additional testing done in time.
It is about to get hot. Meteorologist David Parkinson says if you live on the East Coast, you may want to turn on the AC.
We'll be seeing record high temperatures in the Philadelphia metropolitan area, as high as 95 degrees in Reading, 92 degrees just outside of Washington, D.C.
And Bill Cosby's facing a new sexual assault lawsuit. He's being sued by a former Playboy model under a new California law that suspends the statute of limitations on sex abuse claims. Victoria Valentino alleges he drugged and sexually assaulted her and another woman in 1969. She says she passed out after Cosby gave her a pill at a restaurant, and then she woke up at his home, where, according to the lawsuit, he raped them both. A Cosby spokesperson says the lawsuit lacks any proof or facts. This is CBS News.
Hiring's a lot easier with Indeed. Their powerful platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
I'm Dr. Stork. Eggs are a staple in our diets, and there's only one egg with more delicious farm fresh taste plus superior nutrition. Eggland's Best. With more vitamins, including 6 times more vitamin D and 10 times more vitamin E, plus 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. Available in so many delicious varieties, classic, cage-free, and organic. Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Expand your outdoor living space with the help of S. Johnson Lawn Service in Marshfield. S. Johnson Lawn Service is more than just lawn care. Their team specializes in custom designs, complete remodels, and efficient lawn spray fertilizer application. With over 100 years of landscaping experience, S. Johnson Lawn Service can create a beautiful outdoor space for you and your family. Call 715-305-4729. That's 715-305-4729. Or visit them online at sjohnsonlawnservice.com.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local. I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered storms today, otherwise sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Daytime highs approaching 89, southeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies again, tonight lows level off around 62. Daytime highs approaching 91, tomorrow mainly sunny skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 63.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Man, you're really downing.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And it is public service announcement. It is that time of the week where we have Dr. Kristen Lyerly in this for the first time ever in the studio. Is this your first time on the Waukesha?
It's been a long time.
Well, your first time to the Waukesha studio.
Definitely.
Well, I'm happy to see you in person. I haven't seen you in person since Green Bay.
When we did the Fairmax rally.
2021?
Uh-huh.
Wow, that's a long time. Well, if you are new to this segment, this is our weekly segment with Dr. Kristen Lyerly called Public Cervix Announcement, where we attack mainly women's health issues, but also just health issues in general. Mm-hmm. We take your questions at 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. And we also go through some of the headlines that were health-related. And the first headline that we're going to tackle today is, what is long COVID? Because according to the Washington Post, for the first time, there's a new study that has defined it. And I know I've had COVID twice confirmed, and I don't really think I have any long-term issues. I have a girlfriend, though, who we were talking, and she was talking to her doctor, and she had COVID very early. And separately, we were talking, she's like, because her hair's really been thinning. Mm. And that's her and her doctor's biggest guess of like why her hair is thinning. She's only 30 and is long COVID. And I've had my good friend, that's actually what we won our WBA award for, was my interview with my friend who was in a coma for 3 months from COVID in 2020. And I mean, she's severely paralyzed for the rest of her life. She's on oxygen. She's on, she's paralyzed. I mean, not paralyzed, but she's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And so like that to me is like the very, very extreme of long COVID. But as far as like, what more have we found out now that we are 3 years out from, that's wild.
Yeah.
3 years and a couple of months from the first, when this all broke out.
Think of how much we learned so fast, how we had to learn so much so fast, and how it continues to evolve. And this is really just, it doesn't completely define what long COVID is. There is already a working definition that the World Health Association has been using. This helps to refine the definition and to pare down the over 200 possible conditions have been associated with long COVID. So this really pares it down to about 12 more common things. And then they're looking at how prevalent are these 12 different things. So this just gives them a research point to start looking at how are people affected? How common are these different conditions? And are they truly related to COVID?
Interesting. And what were some of the common ones that people should be looking for?
I'm so glad you asked. I have a list here. Chronic cough is the big thing.
Okay.
Brain fog, thirst, heart palpitations, chest pain, fatigue, dizziness, gastrointestinal symptoms, issues with sexual desire or capacity, And abnormal movements, you know, funny muscle things. But, and that's in order of most to least common based on this study of over 10,000 people. So we'll see where we go from here.
So the first one was actually loss of taste and smell, right?
Maybe I didn't get that one on my list. I think you're right.
Because I'm just looking through the 12 symptoms of long COVID. Right. And because that was when you said, when you started with cough, that made sense. But I also, I remember reading back in like 2021, someone who was like a New York Times food critic.
Yes.
Who lost her taste of, like her taste. And I've never followed up to find out if that person has gotten it back. But that is, I mean, that's wild to me is that that's for some people, it was just permanent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're completely right. That is the number one symptom. So my error on copy and paste. But yeah, I mean, there are so many things here that are, that could be also associated with other things. So it's really important if you have any of these symptoms to get it checked out and make sure that it's not something else that is treatable and that could be resolved.
Because is there much, if it is, if you see your doctor and they, it's not something else, is it just something that at this point you kind of just have to live with and it's just
treating the symptoms?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part.
Wow.
And then figuring out once we've got this defined, how do we treat these symptoms better? So that's the process of research. And that's why we have to keep our minds open as medical knowledge is changing and as we learn more, because things do change. We end up with more solutions and more options and just staying in the game and advocating for yourself and asking lots of questions. That's how we figure these things out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then another article that I found that is, I don't know how much of it's specific to being able to talk about it from a doctor's standpoint, or this is more of a work issue, but, you know, we've talked a lot about paid leave.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about, you know, when you get pregnant and you're recovering from having your kid and having time off and considerations from work, or even being a working parent and having considerations from work. But one thing, largely, because I've yet to have to think about this, is the gap between employers and women who are going through menopause and like what considerations employers should have in mind for women. And so what are some of the symptoms that like can get into like the way of your work when you're going through menopause as a woman?
Oh, the big thing is hot flashes.
Yeah.
I mean, you often can tell when somebody's having a hot flash because they look different. They look uncomfortable. They're fanning themselves. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, in this study, employers were saying, we are offering benefits. We've got this information for people. But people were saying, we don't know about this information. We don't know that our employers have this. And furthermore, we don't necessarily want to share the fact that we're going through menopause because there's so much stigma. It's embarrassing. You don't want to have to share your personal health information with other people. But it really affects our ability as women, as we age, to participate in the workforce. It's not only hot flashes, but what about sleep disturbances? People who aren't sleeping well at night and can't function during the day because they're up half the night sweating and freezing and sweating and freezing. How can we treat that most effectively so that they can do what they need to do during the day?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just something I hadn't thought about as far as like, how do you, like, do you and how do you talk about it with your employer as far as like the, how this is impacting like a very natural thing that women go through? But it is affecting my working capacity.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't call it an illness, but it's a health condition.
It's a transition.
It's a transition. Life is full of transitions. It's just another one of those transitions, but it does have a large impact on your career, on your productivity. And so much of it is going to be individualized depending on what your work environment is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would you handle? Let's ask Jane.
I've thought about that a lot from a pregnancy standpoint of especially in the first trimester when I was so tired and I was like grumpy and had to put on a face to like get on the radio every day. And, you know, it is a mentally taxing job, but I was thinking about it from the standpoint of women who have like a physically taxing job. And in that first trimester, when you're not necessarily telling people, it's when you're the most tired. And like, how do you ask for consideration during that time? And it's just something I hadn't thought about because about the other spectrum of just the changes that we go through our lives that impact our ability to work, and what is the reasonable expectation from the employer's point of view to make accommodations for that.
I think another really insightful example is breastfeeding,
mm-hmm.
because that's another time in your life where you need to take pump breaks sometimes, but sometimes you don't have a job where you can escape every 3 hours to go pump. And if you don't pump every 3 hours, and if you're not drinking water, then your supply is going to go down and you're going to lose the ability to nurse your baby. So it's kind of the same thing. Like, when can you find those little oases in your day? Does your job have that opportunity for you to walk away in order to take care of yourself and the people around you?
Is there anything specific to men? Like, and because obviously there's mental health, there's an actual condition or diagnosis that, but that's not necessarily gender specific, that men can go through as far as also needing to ask for accommodations. But is there anything specific to men? And I'm asking that genuinely, but also to make the point, like, God.
Well, maybe as they get older and have enlarged prostates, they have more urinary frequency. We have that too. I'm thinking of like my kids and video game breaks. No, I honestly don't know. Like, I don't take care of men, and they tend to have more of a gradual, like, we have times in our lives that are like nodal changes, like pregnancy, breastfeeding, menopause happens pretty quickly, but for men, it tends to be more of a gradual change.
Yeah.
So I think it's just really different.
It is really different.
But let's make sure that we give men the opportunity that they need to be able to take care of their own health, because they absolutely need to do that.
And they're not always the best at doing it.
Right.
They're not the best at going to the doctor when something's wrong.
Right.
And so this is public service announcement. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here in studio with us answering questions about women's health, talking about headlines. And where should we go next? Because we got about 3 minutes before the next break.
What else do we have on our list?
We have, how do I know the state of my immune system? Do you think you can answer that in 3 minutes?
Yeah, okay. I can. All right. So your immune system, we get sick. It is normal for us to get sick. That's why we have immune systems. But if you are getting sick more than a few times a year, or if there are certain things that cause you to get sick regularly, maybe it's something more than just a normal illness.
Okay.
And then it's worth going, just, you know, talk to your doctor, get a little blood test. We don't screen for this. We do not screen for this. So when you go for your routine preventive care, we don't get a blood test to check your immune system.
Is there a blood test to just check your immune system?
There's a really general one. A complete blood count can look at your white blood cells, which is a big part of your immune system.
Okay.
But once you start to dive in on your specific symptoms, your risk factors, your family history, what's going on with you, there are lots of different things that we can look into, and lots of different tests, including tests for autoimmune disorders and genetic disorders. So it really does require a more complicated, deeper dive. But the first step is just recognizing that, hey, I'm getting sick more than I think I should be, and then going to see your doctor.
What is an average amount of, like, with the 1 minute that we have left, I see you, Greg. what's a healthy amount of times to get sick in a year?
I don't know, 3, 4.
Okay.
Kind of depends on the year, too. Like, after COVID, everybody got sick because we had, you know, isolated ourselves. If you're exposed to more things, you're probably going to get sick more often. If you have a kid, you're probably going to get sick more often. Sorry. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you have any questions for Dr. Lyerly, feel free to call or text 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. We're going to take a break and be right back.
At Lakeland Care, we build better lives. As a nonprofit organization offering care management in northeastern Wisconsin, our staff lives and works in the areas we serve. Through customized plans designed to help eligible elders and adults with disabilities live independently, we offer a unique, people-centered approach to family care. That's because we know how important it is to remain connected to your family, friends, and community. Learn more about our long-term care options by contacting your county Aging and Disability Resource Center.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
A no-holds-barred political conversation. That's Matt Flynn Direct.
Anybody running against Trump, if he calls them a nasty name, they should hit him back twice as hard. This is not the Marcus of Queensberry gentleman's rules anymore. In politics, certainly not in the Republican Party. Hit him hard.
Matt Flynn Direct. Weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. Log on civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. High of 88 today under partly cloudy skies. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Mainly clear tonight. Lows around 60. Mainly sunny skies again tomorrow. Highs level off around 88. Ample sunshine expected Sunday with daytime highs approaching 83. 78, chance for scattered thunderstorms Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
Download the Civic Media app now so you can listen to this brilliance anywhere, anytime.
This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry here with Dr. Kristen Lyerly for our weekly segment, Public Cervix Announcement. And the one that I wanted to talk about next in the last segment that we have you here for, but we'll have you back next week, is it's never too late for exercise to boost your brain health. And I think, like, at this point, you can't even deny that everyone should know at this point that the amount of benefits that exercise brings to your mental health, to your dopamine levels and your serotonin levels, and you just feel better. It's funny to me, every time I work out, which is not as much as it should be right now, I end the workout in that mode of like, I'm going to do this every day. And like, yeah, imagine how great I would feel if I just did this all the time, regularly. And then the next day comes, it's like, I have too much to do. Mm-hmm. But as far as helping people get into the habit of exercising, like, what, when we say exercise, what is that actually defined as? Because I was having this conversation with kind of with my mom, who in the summer works out in the yard, right? Mm-hmm. She is a gardener. I don't know the last time she was in a gym. Mm-hmm. And sorry, mom, but you know what I mean? And so it's like, what do you have to do to get these kinds of benefits?
Totally depends on who you are and what your capabilities are. Sorry. But I mean, working out in the garden is exercise. It's activity. But it probably doesn't get our heart rate up to a point where it's really, truly aerobic.
Yeah.
And it can be, depending on what she's doing, it can be repetitive. So it can actually cause more aches and pains and more muscle issues than if she was doing something more like Pilates or yoga or even, you know, walking. Mm-hmm. I mean, walking is going to raise your heart rate, especially if you walk briskly, and that's going to be good for your cardiovascular health. But one thing I think is really important for everybody, especially as we age, is some sort of strength training. And that doesn't mean you have to go to the gym and lift weights. That could be Pilates, it could be resistance bands, but something that makes you actually increase your muscle mass. Muscle mass helps you burn more calories. It helps your body stay more stable. It helps you avert falls. So there are so many reasons that you need to do some sort of strength training, ideally 3 times a week.
And so specifically for women, when it comes to that, does strength training specifically help fend off osteoporosis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely it does. Because when you strengthen your muscles, what are your muscles attached to?
Your bones.
Yeah. So it puts stress on your bones. We don't think about our bones as living things, but our bones are constantly remodeling. So if
really?
Yeah.
What is that? What do you mean by that?
They're breaking down and building up all the time. And they are contributing to the calcium levels in our blood. So our bodies are always a work in progress. It is not too late, friends. Like, if you are motivated and you want to do something good for yourself, exercise. Don't think that you're going to exercise the way that you did when you were in your 20s. But, you know, just start with a walk. Start with some gentle yoga. Start with some Pilates. Go talk to your doctor and come up with an exercise routine that's good and healthy for you, taking into consideration all of your medical conditions, whether it's arthritis, cardiovascular issues, diabetes. All of those things can benefit from regular exercise.
That is good to know.
And
is that also a deal for me? The thing. It's like, I don't know how often my heart rate is getting that high these days, but I am, like, on the weekends I've been good at, like, lifting weights, and I try to go for a walk. But as far as, like, is it just the effect of, like, just doing something rather than nothing?
It's so different in pregnancy.
Is it?
Yeah, because everything's different. Your lung capacity, your lungs can't expand all the way because your uterus is expanding instead. So it's harder to breathe. You might notice that you're short of breath more easily.
Going up the stairs has been harder. I will admit that, yeah.
And your joints tend to be more flexible. So if you're doing yoga, because your body releases a hormone called relaxin, in order to prepare you for childbirth, because your pelvis is actually made of bones that are fused together and have these loose-ish joints, so your pelvis can expand a little at the time of birth.
Huh.
So it tends to make your knees, your elbows, people experience more dislocations. So you have to be a little more careful when you're lifting weights when you're pregnant. Maybe don't go to max out every time. Maybe do more reps. But it is really important to maintain your cardiovascular health and just, you know, pay attention to what your body is telling you. You're not going to win any marathons when you're 8 months pregnant.
Unless you were already... I've seen some women who were runners before.
Yeah.
I had a friend who actually did the half Birkenbeiner 30 weeks pregnant.
Wow.
She finished it. But she was also, like, good at cross-country skiing.
Yeah.
With the couple minutes that we have left, we have a text?
We do have a text.
All right.
Coming from, let's see here, from the 414, Dr. Lyerly, I have had all the COVID vaccinations. I haven't been sick. Is there any way to test to find out if I ever have got COVID?
That is a great question. You can get an antibody test, but why? You know, what? Every time I order a test for someone, I think to myself, what is the purpose of this test? What am I going to do with the test result? So does it change anything about the way that you live your life or the way that you approach situations in your life? Probably not, but there are antibody tests out there. It is confusing, though, because you've been vaccinated. So are those antibodies from the vaccines or are they from natural immunity? I don't think it's worth pursuing, to be totally honest. But congratulations on not having had COVID, probably.
Yeah. You're one of the very few. What was the joke for a little while? This is not targeted towards you, texter. But that if you haven't had any COVID, you clearly aren't very popular. Just kidding.
No, she's, like, resilient.
Yes,
she's made
a
superhero. Iron. And long COVID, people who are more likely to get long COVID are people who didn't get vaccinated or people who have been infected more than twice.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make any difference if you got, like, the first or earlier strands of it when it was more powerful? I don't even know if that's the right word to use.
I don't know that we have that data.
Because I think because I feel like in that first year, some people were getting so sick.
Mm-hmm.
And now more and more, not that people aren't still dying from it, because they are. But now more and more, it feels like when people get COVID, just a different version of a cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's unscientific to frame it like that way, but it doesn't feel as like, people were really sick that first year.
It's been around though. Our bodies are used to it.
Yeah.
All right. It's mutated.
Well, Dr. Lyerly, until next week, this has been Public Service Announcement. Thank you for being here.
Such a joy.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Laura Dresser from COWS about obstacles to labor. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Hey everybody, glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Having low income can mean making tough choices, choosing between paying for food or medication or a place to live is a reality for many people. Do you know someone who could use some extra help? Find out about the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, administered by Social Security. You could receive monthly SSI payments if your income and financial resources are low and you are 65 or older, or an adult or child with a disability or who is blind. SSI is money you can use to help pay for basic needs, like putting food on the table, keeping the lights on, paying the rent. It can mean new shoes for growing feet or help with medical needs. Call 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSI to schedule an appointment or start to apply today. That's ssa.gov/SSI. This message produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care, they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Chance for scattered storms today, otherwise sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Daytime highs approaching 89, southeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies again, tonight lows level off around 62. Daytime highs approaching 91, tomorrow mainly sunny skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 63.
Combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And if you have listened to the show at all, you know that we talk a lot about the labor shortage and the working age population decline and people getting back to work and what policies actually help that and hurt that. But today we're going to talk about the barriers to people who want to work, but there's something in the way from them being able to do that. And so here to talk about it is Laura Dresser, who is a source associate director of the Center of Wisconsin Strategy, which is an economic think tank at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to the show, Laura.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're so excited. So the very first question that we have, which is very important and serious, is that the Center of Wisconsin Strategy, the acronym is COWS. So do you guys refer to it as COWS or do you refer to it as COWS?
Quite honestly, We go by just cows.
Nice.
Because, I mean, I actually found that this name travels really well in Wisconsin. People get it, even though we don't do anything about agriculture or cows or anything. But, you know, we're center on Wisconsin strategy. So we go by cows now. And then the further I am from the state, it's like a kind of geographic measure of how distressed people are for me for the name of the place I work. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Wait, New York. Excuse me, what?
In New York, it's very disturbing. But here it's fun. And the name was chosen to produce the acronym.
Oh, you know, just like most of the bills
that's
in
really
Congress.
What we wanted.
Just like the Curd bill, right. Co-sponsored by Tammy Baldwin.
Well, we're delighted, Laura. We are very pro-cow. So.
We are very pro-cow.
Excellent. Pleased to give you this opportunity to say cows. We do make jokes like the herd. We call ourselves the herd, et cetera. Of course.
I love economists making puns.
About the funniest we get.
And so for people who are unfamiliar, what is this type of work that is the center of cows? What kind of work does cows actually work on?
Oh, cows is a lot of work. And one of the reasons we sort of stick with cows now is we do work outside of the state a lot in addition to the work in the state. The work that's probably most familiar to listeners here would be we release a report called The State of Working Wisconsin every year mm-hmm. that really follows how workers are doing at the middle, what's going on with unions and jobs and wages and inequality. So we do that and monitor what's going on in the Wisconsin economy a lot. And that tends to be useful here. We also do work with mayors all over the country, with secretaries of transportation. So I have a big agenda around building a high road, an economy that works for people and works for the planet, rather than one that just works for capital. So that's
nice.
What we're about.
Awesome. All right. So I guess when the government defines employment barriers, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose when the government defines it, you know, or when people think about it in their heads, it's the stuff that stands in the way of making work for people. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we tend to think of like there's workers and there's not workers. But what there are is like a whole range of things that makes work possible. Right. So in a time when there are a lot of jobs, one of the things that happens is jobs get better. Right? To mm-hmm. attract people, to hold on to people. And we've watched that happen over the last year and a half in really dramatic ways, especially the bottom of the labor market. So jobs get better. That's one way that you kind of overcome barriers to work. Like if they pay more, someone who's facing high childcare costs suddenly sees that it's possible to work because the wage is higher, maybe. Right? Mm-hmm. So things are more fluid. Everybody is making decisions. Am I a worker? Am I not a worker? And they're making a decision on the basis of what does it take for me to get to that work site? So transportation can be really important. What do I get from that work site? Wages and schedules and benefits. And what's going on in my life or my community that needs my attention? My family, my kids. Or that the situation of getting care to this kid is so expensive, it makes me lose money when I go into work, right? All of these are kind of dynamic decisions. They're not a decision you make one day and then that's the truth for you always. You're always a worker. You're not a worker. Everyone is, you know, kind of, especially when you're close to the margins on these things, you got a little kid that's expensive, mm-hmm. And you kind of want to spend some time with the kids. So like, you know, you're kind of making these balancing questions. And so that's, I think, I like people to think it's sort of a little more fluid, this space. And one of the things that's really going on right now is jobs are getting better. That's good. But especially moms, because moms tend to carry the burden mm-hmm. of family care, especially lower wage workers with real transportation issues, especially folks who really need health insurance to be working. Our low wage jobs tend not to provide that. And so, you know, these are folks who I think face barriers in this time.
Got it. We're talking to Laura Dresser, who's Associate Director of COWS, Center of Wisconsin Strategy. And so I feel like for the amount that we've talked about it on this show and the amount that I've read about it, and I am not an expert, but I'm very interested, I feel like our labor participation rate in Wisconsin tells two stories. On the one hand, we've talked about how our labor participation rate in Wisconsin for working age people is like the second highest in the country, which is great, right? So that proves that our unemployment rates are low. And also for the people who are of working age, a lot of them are working comparatively to other states. Simultaneously, that same measure of labor participation has been declining since like 1997. And so it feels like there's these two stories happening as far as like of like how many people are working. And so like what do you make of those two numbers, or what should we take away from that?
Okay. I'm going to do my big headline and then I'm going to just dive lightly into the weeds.
Okay.
So but at the headline level, I think that the important thing to see is that Wisconsin is working. I think a year, year and a half ago, we had this like, everybody kind of bought into this great resignation story, right? Oh, the pandemic supports were so generous and everybody realized they didn't really like work anyway. And so they're van life and GoFundMe. And this is what's happened to everybody. Nobody wants to work anymore. We sort of did this great resignation language. And that just wasn't true. Right? People are working, like you said, we're working more, you know, about the level we were before the pandemic at this point. Wisconsin has always had a high labor force participation rate, especially it's driven by high rate labor force participation rates of women. Look at us. and so Wisconsin is still relatively high. And Wisconsin is working. And there isn't a story about creating laziness or being too generous with government programs to get people out of the labor market, which is, I think, what the Great Resignation tended to feed, especially on the conservative side, was this analysis that like people are taking advantage of all this generosity and they're getting lazy. And that's why we can't find workers. So that I set aside. Yeah. That is not true. We are working. But I think the other thing that's going on, and you mentioned this earlier, is we have a decline in the prime age population, 25 to 54. Just kiss that goodbye. So I'm sad that that's prime age. I know. I mean, I still am saying goodbye prime age. Anyway, so we're declining. You know, the baby boom is aging out. Mm-hmm. And as people get older, they're less likely to work. So the long-term, I saw a recent analysis, this is in the weeds, but a recent analysis of the kind of long-term decline in Wisconsin's labor force participation rate from the University of Wisconsin Extension had a deep dive into this. And I think their summary was that it is largely the result of the changing demographics that we see this decline. So still high labor force participation rates, but with an aging population, that's what describes it.
Yeah.
Laura, speaking of an aging population, and I don't know if you looked at this particularly, but I think challenges for women over 50 are really, really real. And I was at one place for almost 25 years, a couple months before I turned 50, they let me go. And they say they want workers, but they certainly would like someone younger than you.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to, absolutely. Older workers who, and some workers stepped out because older workers were at greater threat during the pandemic, right? So that the health risk was higher. And so this stepping out, which was what people should do, especially in that intense shutdown year, and then coming back, finding a way in is really hard. And I think that's another place where you can kind of see the thinness of the claim that this is all just, we can't find anyone willing to work. There's deep questions about the quality of the job. And one of the things that makes older workers kind of harder to appeal to is they have wages that were better at one point, and they're not going to work for these really low wages. And so I think thinking about job quality in this question so centrally, like what are employers doing? What are they trying to drive through the wage strategies, and how does that impact like you're saying, Jane, the older workers?
And so I don't know if this is the most up-to-date stat, but there's somewhere around 100,000 open jobs in Wisconsin right now, ish. And would you agree with that, Laura? Is that the numbers?
Measuring open jobs is,
That was kind of going to be my question. So it's like, if that is kind of the number that gets thrown out there right now, and we've covered the story before about like fake job openings that companies are now just putting stuff up there because they're always hiring, even though the job's not actually open. So there's that. But as far as, was there anything that came out of the most recent state of working Wisconsin that showed where the most vacancies are? Because we've talked about a nursing shortage. We've talked about a teacher shortage. The service industry is constantly struggling. So it's like, is there trends within that as far as, like we said, the jobs that are available, are they jobs that people actually want? Are they jobs that have a obstacle because of their higher education requirements? Or like, what trends are we seeing of the jobs that are open?
Yeah, I think so. One salient difference is the high turnover, especially the low wage service jobs. I feel like low wage service work, retail, hospitality, food and beverage, you know, the whole kind of set of things around there. We have over the last 40 years, those jobs defining the bottom of the labor market have become harder and harder to sustain families on. They now offer very uneven hours, very low benefit packages, very low relative wages, especially as we've seen the minimum wage become less and less relevant, right? And so the best news in the last 2 years has been the high turnover that we have seen churning through that. That has lifted the floor on the lowest wages jobs. So that, and you all, I mean, listeners can see this in, you know, people advertising in service work at $15-16 an hour in the cities now, in Madison and Milwaukee. So that's one place where there's been a real change in the structure of pay. And I think a move towards greater hours of work, like more full-time jobs in those service jobs. There's shortages. So that's where the kind of formal and informal organizing of workers is changing what work looks like. Then, of course, there are these, you know, shortages for specific skills. And sometimes those skills take a while to get, right? So nursing is a perennial shortage where I think the question is really about, is it the quality of the job and the supports to the nurses, or is it really the supply? And I think there's a pretty strong argument, especially during the pandemic, that the demands on workers were really high. The rewards were low. The threat of health problems was high. And that made that job a harder job to fill, for sure. The system is responding with skills, but that's the way. I think that's that one.
Absolutely. Works. All right. Well, when we come back from the break, I'd love to talk about what policies you think would actually help with some of these obstacles and how that compares to maybe some of the policies that we're getting. Do those align? I'm going to say no, maybe not. But we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back. Our guest is Laura Dresser, who's the Associate Director of the Center of Wisconsin Strategy, also known as COWS. Stick around. This is Ask Coast Wisconsin. Hard in the evening. Red's easy at night. Big balls, man. Big balls, man. Big balls, man. Can't you hear me when I call? I said you ain't so big, God. You just tall, that's all.
It's time you checked out Champions Pub on Milwaukee's East Side, a classic Milwaukee tavern since 1956. Champions is a comfortable place to gather and enjoy a drink over a game of shuffleboard, cribbage, bags, golden tea, or just relax in its sunny beer garden or covered deck. Champions Pub has something for everyone. It's a great place to escape the usual bar crowds and hide out for drinks and conversation. Stop by Champions Pub and enjoy its good service and low-key neighborhood atmosphere.
At Lakeland Care, we build better lives. Located right here in northeastern Wisconsin, our staff lives and works in the areas we serve. Offering public and private care management options, we have a strong track record of success in helping members of our community live their happiest, healthiest, and most independent lives. Beyond care management, we now offer consulting, coaching, and training for individuals and organizations. Where you need us, when you need us, we're on your team. Visit LakelandCareInc.com to learn more.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A blend of clouds and sun today with highs around 88. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, lows level off around 60. Mainly clear tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 89. Turning cooler Sunday and Monday with highs from the upper 70s to the low 80s. Chance for scattered thunderstorms Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 55 degrees.
Kind of like going round and round on the floor at Waukesha Skateland. Except without the rental skates. Know what I mean? This is the Shaw. W-A-U-K.
Near Santa Fe, I met a cowboy riding the range one day. And as he jogged along, I heard him singing the most peculiar cowboy song. It was a ditty he learned in the city. Come a tie, aye, aye, aye. Come a tie, hippity, aye, aye. Now get along.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are joined by Laura Dresser, who is the Associate Director of the Center of Wisconsin Strategy, also known as COWS. Is that why you picked that song,
Jane? Cow, cow, boogie. It's a cow, cow, boogie by the Judds, man.
All right. Well, unfortunately, I know this is going to go too fast, and so we're going to have you back, Laura. But as far as addressing some of these obstacles, because the topic that we're talking about, if you're just joining us, is when we're talking about labor shortage, when we're talking about job openings, that there are other obstacles in the way of people who want to work but are choosing based on what their life is right now, that they either can't get there, they can't afford childcare, and there are all these different things that get in the way of them working. So what are some of the policies that could actually move the needle on this? And for the people who could be working but can't right now, could make them, what's the best way to say this? Like work for them. I think that was your words.
Yeah. So the first one I'd like to, raise up is we had a lot of investment. The state really did a lot of critical investment into childcare infrastructure with federal money over the past, since the pandemic started. And childcare is a sector that is perennially stressed, but has been in crisis over the last 2 years. Center directors are having a hard time staying, keeping rooms open, hiring staff, facing, a hard time keeping people in the rooms and being able to take care of kids. And so childcare infrastructure needs investments. Childcare counts was the governor's proposed version of this, and right now sits at the side, as many things do, in the joint finance process. And I think Raising Wisconsin and other advocates have really been pushing for these investments in childcare in the infrastructure that allows mostly moms, but parents of little kids to work. And that's essential in this state if we're going to talk about labor supply and people working. So that's my first nominee is invest in childcare. A second one I want to point out is like a kind of pet peeve of mine. We're the only state, our borders with Michigan up at the UP and Minnesota and Illinois, all those states have higher minimum wages, and especially for tipped workers. So if you were going to be a tipped worker on one side of the Mississippi River or the other, if you're going to work in a restaurant and on the Minnesota side of the border, you get paid more than 10 bucks an hour. On the Wisconsin side of the border, you get $2.30 an hour from your boss. Where do you go work? You go work on the Mississippi side of the border. So, I mean, on the Minnesota side of the river. And so, you know, like as we let the bottom fall out of our labor market by not attending the minimum wage, we are losing workers to this places where they can go for better wages. So that's another one for me.
That one doesn't come up as much. Like, I know that our minimum wage and our sub-minimum wage for tipped workers is the federal minimum, and we haven't increased in a long time. But as far as the amount of people who potentially work in the service industry who'd look at that and they're like, well, why would I? It's the same weather wherever I go. So I'm going to go where I'm going to get paid a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, Minnesota used to have... It's a smaller state than we are, but it's raised its labor force participation rates over time. This just sort of holds up, like, what does it mean to reward work instead of to punish work, right?
Yeah.
And I think as a strategy, what we need to think is, like, make work appealing is how you get workers into the labor force. And I think, you know, Medicaid expansion is another place where, like, I could... You know, like if I knew how health insurance was going to happen, I could put up with this job more easily. Like supporting people rather than acting like everybody's trying to get something for nothing is a way to kind of support the labor market.
And then the last one I want to make sure we touch on is transportation.
Yeah.
Because I was reading about this is, you know, they're in the bigger cities, there's buses. But also, like, getting to and from suburbs in different parts of the, you know, either Southeast and Milwaukee and all the suburbs down here, Fox Valley, Madison, and as they grow, potentially. And, like, I had a flashback to when I lived in the Bay Area, and I took a shuttle down from San Francisco to Mountain View. And, like, that was a private shuttle, but, like, at least there was even an option to do that. Like, I don't even think there's private companies that are offering to shuttle people around so you can actually get to your job.
Yeah, I think that the stuff about borders and transit systems in Wisconsin feels very rigid and inefficient and stuck in the past, right? Like, there's, you know, people need to move across city borders, you know, through the region. And just think about, for those of you who are from around Madison, just what a lift it was to extend Madison Metro outside city limits, like how much political work that takes. I mean, but that everybody moves across that border all the time, right?
It's
a fiction in a way. But our structures and, you know, the structures of coordination on transportation and the lack of investment in it both really stand in the way of making systems that work for working people.
Well, any other closing thoughts on this topic, even though this is what you study all the time, so I'm sure you have lots to say.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm delighted to talk about this topic, of course. I've been writing this State of Working Wisconsin for more than a quarter of a century. And the labor market right now is doing things for low-wage workers that it has not done since I've been writing that report. And
oh, wow.
I think we're so obsessed, I don't know, with weird inflation. I mean, I get inflation is hard and it's hard to carry. But a tight labor market moves power towards workers. It isn't just about unemployment. It's about how long the line is at the door. And I think seeing both, you know, that this is a good economy, it is good for workers, and it's been especially good for the workers that needed it the most. It's not enough, you know, but that's a theme I always sound if you're going to give me
that. No, totally. And that's so interesting. That's interesting. So in 25 years, this is the best you've seen, like, as far as, like, conditions for workers?
Yeah, that kind of closing of the gap from the bottom to the middle to see the trends that we've seen in these last couple of years.
Well, there's some good news to end on, Laura Dresser.
There you go.
All right, well, we'll definitely have you back because this was super interesting, and everything you study is stuff that I am super interested in. So thank you for spending time with us today.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day. All right. Well, when we come back after the news, we will talk to Paul Noonan for a sports update. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Please don't look away. He's what you call swinging half breed, singing his cow cow boogie in the strangest way. Come attack.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action. Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP.
WFHR, Wisconsin
Council.
Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM. Your